Rebbe, let's get started. Today what I'd like to try to do over here is finish up Siman Sadi Aleph and try to figure it out together. Let me get my Shulchan Aruch here. And let's give like some basic introduction to Siman Sadi Beis, and then I got to hit the road. So let's try to get all that done. So we left off yesterday. We went through the two chumras that Rama adds to the whole thing, right? Where the Rama says that Yesh Omrim Da'ananim Bekiim Bedavar V'Yesh Lanakshav V'Vilu Melichas Tzli Kirosayach. That even if something is just even very lightly salted, like you would to roast meat, we assume it's meliach karoseach. And then the second chumrah, when it comes to fatty meat, that we don't know what's called fatty, and therefore all meat is considered fatty unless it's mamish bone dry. But as we pointed out yesterday, the Rama assumes that he's fully cognizant of the fact that that is a chumrah, that is not the ikar adin, and therefore b'makom hefsin meruba we can be makil. V'tov l'hachmir b'dav b'makom she'ein hefsin meruba. He says it's good to be machmir unless it's hefsin meruba. Now let's move on to the next thing. So we discussed yesterday, was it tasa gavar, right? That when you have hot and cold, one on top of the other, the bottom one is the dominant one. The bottom always overpowers the top. So if cold milk falls onto a hot piece of meat, the meat and the milk will be forbidden because we view it as if it's hot and hot, as if they were cooked together. But if hot milk falls onto cold meat, then what's the halacha? Then we view that really as cold and cold, and therefore nothing should be usur. By the time it cools off, we assume time transferred into the kadei klipa, and therefore you need to remove a klipa of the meat and a klipa of the milk, but you can't remove a klipa of milk. So we had that three-way machlokas yesterday, how to deal with the milk, right? But a klipa has to be removed. Good. Now the Gemara tells us, the Gemara on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph just adds a qualification. The Gemara says, yeah, this is all true. The hanimili chai, avot tzli boi klipa. That when it's chai, when it's raw, unsalted meat, that's when it's mutter, if it touches milk while it's cold. But if you have roasted meat, that cold, that touches milk, then you're going to need klipa, because we assume that just by virtue of the fact that it's been roasted already, it's more absorbent, it's more spongy, and it will absorb some of the milk that it touches. That's the Gemara's statement. So there is machlokes rishonim how to define the terms tzli and chai over here, right? The Gemara makes a clear distinction between chai, where tam does not transfer when it's cold and cold, and tzli, where tam does transfer at least into a kedei klipa. So in the Sefer HaTruma, Simen Samach Gimel, and the Rush in Simen Lamed Gimel, they say that chai means raw, tzli means that it's been cooked or roasted, meaning it is already cooked or roasted. That's the definition of the term, the most basic definition of the term. However, the Ramban in his Chidushim, as well as other Rishonim, say that there's no difference whether it's raw or cooked. Tzli is just another way of saying hot. Chai is another way of saying cold. And all the Gemara is telling us is that if you have hot meat that falls into cold milk, you're going to need a kedei klipa. Even though tasa gavar, you're still going to need a kedei klipa. So it's not really telling us any chiddush about something that's tzli per se. So it comes on the Shulchan Aruch in Siv Zayin, and the Shulchan Aruch says, Had mefalginan bein nechal machmas malcho, le'eno nechal machmas malcho, that which we distinguish between very salty and not so very salty, hanimili bebasar chai, that's only true by basar chai. Aval tzli roteach shenafal maliach afilu nechal machmas malcho boi klipa. But even if something is not so salty, but it is tzli roteach, what does that mean? Hot meat that falls into cheese, that falls onto cheese, even though it's not salty, you're going to require klipa. Boiling hot meat falls into a bowl of cold, even only slightly salted milk, you're going to need to remove a klipa from the meat because tasa'a gavar, but the heat of the top one is enough to create a sense of kedei klipa. So the Kaf HaChaim just adds over here, he writes, V'yafal pishat sli shokeal l'toch ha-chalav. He says, wait a second, what happens when meat falls into chalav? It sinks in the chalav. Shokeal l'toch ha-chalav. V'achalav tsof al atzli. So what happens if meat falls into a bowl of milk? What's going to be on top? Meaning it may start out with the meat being the ila'a, but once the meat lands in the bowl, the milk is going to be the thing on top, and the meat is going to sink right to the bottom of the bowl, and there's going to be milk all over the top of it. So says the Kaf HaChaim, V'yafafi sh'atzli shokeya l'toch ha'chalav, ha'chalav tzach al atzli. The chalav floats on top of, over the surface of the tzli. Eino kitzonin l'tocham. We don't view this as cold on top of hot. The kol shehu b'mekomo gover u'mekarer hatzli shenafal l'tocho, hilkach b'klip asagi. We view it at the point of impact. And at the point of impact, the tzli, the meat, was the upper one, and the milk was the lower one, and therefore we apply tasa gavar, and the milk wins. Beis Yosef b'shem harashbash, shach, sivkan chav gimel, prichadash al schaf, right, the Kaf HaChaim gives you his marmakamos. The shach and sivkan chav gimel quotes from the Rashba. The Rashba says, why is the meat considered to be on top, right? So this is the shach, sivkan chav gimel, that the Kaf HaChaim is referring to. And the Rashba's answer, the Lashon of the Rashba is, v'yesh lomar, kivan shenafal l'toch hachalav, havalei kecham l'toch tzonein, V'yafal pisha tzli shokeya l'toch hachalav, v'achalav tzafal tzli, eino kitzonin l'toch cham. V'kol shu b'mekomo gover mekar tzli shenafal l'tocho, hilkach b'klip asagi. Meaning, the Rashba gave this answer, this is what the Kaf HaChaim is quoting, that, and the Shach quotes it, that the milk isn't in motion, it's considered the stronger one, it's the one that it's b'mekomo, it's the one that was stationed at the bottom, and therefore it is stronger even if ultimately it goes to the top. So even though we keep giving examples of tasa gavri la gavar with meat and cheese, the same would be true with meat and milk. We ran into the problem of kedei klipa by meat and milk, but that we dealt with yesterday. But as far as what's considered on top, what's considered on bottom, we don't worry about the fact that a liquid ultimately engulfs everything that comes into it. Then the Gemara adds another point. The Gemara Kufyud Beis Amud Aleph adds, the ispe pili kulei asir, that if there are cracks in the meat, then the entire thing becomes asir, and klipa is not enough. I mean, if there are cracks in the meat, then the milk is not only going to affect the surface of the meat, it's going to work its way into those cracks, and it's going to ruin the whole thing. So, because the milk gets into those cracks, it affects the whole piece of meat. So the Gemara says, "V'ein metavel betavlin kulei aser." If the meat was cooked while it was spiced, then it's softened, it's more easily balea, and the meat will be aser, and the klipa won't help. So essentially what we're doing is we're giving exceptions to this rule of klipa. So we already mentioned yesterday, one exception to the rule of klipa is fatty. If it's fatty, we assume it's mefapeh bekulo. Now we add another exception to the rule of klipa, ispe pili. If there are cracks in the meat, we assume it gets in throughout the entire thing. And then the metavel betavlin. If the meat was cooked while it was spiced, also we assume it becomes super absorbent, much more spongy. It's going to take in whatever time the milk, whatever mamashas even, that the milk has to offer. So the Shulchan Aruch and Siv Zayin goes on and tells us, V'im yeshbo b'ka'im, o shum metuvel b'tavlin, v'utzli rotev kulos, straight from the Gemara, that if it has cracks in it, or it's super spiced, so then we view it as if it's hot, and the whole thing is aser. The hot falling meat has cracks in it, has been spiced, the entire piece of meat is aser, because the cracks and spice, along with the fact that the meat is hot, allow the milk to get into the entire piece of meat. All of this assumes, according to Rov Rishonim, that the meat is hot, that the meat is, right, that we're talking about a case where otherwise it would be a kedei klipa, because even though tasa gavar, the ilah is hot, the top thing is hot, so we're assuming the meat is hot, but we're saying even though the meat is hot, the bottom one is cold, the cheese is cold, the milk is cold, still you're going to need more than kedei klipa if you have one of these things. Fatty meat, cracked meat, spiced meat. Any of those things will cause it to be mefapeh bekulo.
What's the finish of this? If you're already sending more before, either, or in some form, we said that hot meat would already be
bolea,
and now we're just
saying
hot and spiced,
and it would
have.
No, we said
kedei klipa.
But the ilah, the hot is the ilah, the tasa is cold. We're saying that, so normally the halach would be kedei klipa. But now we're saying that it has the capacity to absorb much more than kedei klipa. The Ramah argues in this. The Ramah writes, V'yeshlom da'afilu heim tzonim dina hachi. He says you don't even need it to be hot. V'yeshlino gimein hefsim ruba. Even if the meat is cold, meaning these exceptions aren't just an exception to the rule of kidei klipa, they're even an exception to the rule of hadacha, that you only need, normally when two cold things come in contact with each other, good, all you need is hadacha. No, but if you have these things, it's spiced or cracked, then it's going to need more than hadacha. We're going to assume it gets through the entire piece of meat. And that makes this whole thing very much lemaisa in the case where your freezer breaks and you find, a piece of cooked meat that was cooked and then frozen, and the ice cream from above worked its way right through the foil that was covering it and is sitting in the ice cream. So the Ramah says, unless it's a hefsid meruba, then you need to be machmir that it got through all the cracks of the meat. If it's already been cooked, it's been spiced, or it has cracks, then the entire piece of meat is going to be asr, because once it's been cooked, we assume the meat is soft, more spongy, it's going to be more absorbent, and the cracks and the spices also will allow the milk to travel throughout the meat. If the meat is raw, so then, again, if it's spiced or it has cracks in it, so you would have the same. No, if it's raw, then you don't have this problem because it's only by its sli. If it's been spiced or has cracks in it, then you would only need to rinse it or scrub it. Then the Ramah says that when there's a hefsin meruba, again, you can rely on the Shulchan Aruch. Prichadish and Chavizdash just make an important ha'ara over here. Let's say there are cracks in the meat, but you have shishim. Meaning, so what's the concern when there are cracks in the meat? What's going to happen? The milk is going to get throughout the meat. What happens when you cook milk together with meat? Let's say you cooked milk together with meat. So what's the halacha? Depends. Depends on ratio. Right? If the meat is 60 times the size of the milk, what's the halacha? Kosher. It's kosher. Everything's fine. Would you say the same thing over here? Let's say the meat is 60 times the size of the milk. The whole concern is that the milk is going to get bikulo, it's going to absorb into kulo. So shouldn't we say, okay, so shishim should help over here? So the prichadash and the chavizdash say that if there are cracks in the meat, shishim is not going to help you. Because when you cook meat together with milk or together with cheese or something, we assume the tam of the milk is going to evenly distribute itself throughout the entire piece of meat. And therefore, there could be bitul b'shishim, because the meat is going to absorb in evenly the tiny amount of milk, and therefore it's going to overwhelm that tiny amount of milk. Yeah, that's when you cook it together. But over here, what's the concern? You didn't cook it together. What's the concern over here? If there are cracks? What's the concern if there are cracks? Hello? Hello? Anyone awake? What's the concern if there are cracks? It's going to work, right, it's going to sit in those cracks. It's not going to be evenly distributed throughout the entire thing. So you can have all the shishim you want, it's not going to help, because it's sitting in those cracks. That's what the Prichadash and the Chavizdas point out. The milk won't be evenly distributed. Yad Yehuda disagrees. Yad Yehuda says, no, you would still say shishim. Not sure why. I guess he thinks cracked meat just allows passageways, but then ultimately the milk is going to get everywhere. And then he has a big chiddush. He says, and even if you hold like the prichadash and the chavzdas, that shishim is not going to help, if you have mea v'esrim, it helps. If you have 120 times, why would 120 times help? So he says, imagine you have two pieces of dry meat, let's say. One of them is kosher, three pieces of dry meat. One of them is kosher, two of them are kosher, one of them is not kosher. What's that halacha? You have three hamburgers, right? Last night there were hamburgers. So three hamburgers. Two of them are kosher, one of them is not kosher. Obviously, if there was ever a non-kosher hamburger that made its way into the kitchen, they would kosher the whole place, and no one would eat anything for a week or whatever, and we'd fast and terkri or whatever. But but la halacha. You have two kosher hamburgers, one non-kosher, bitul barov. So there's a din of bitul barov when you're dealing with two dry things that are mixed together. So he says, let's say the milk sits in the cracks, and therefore that part of the meat that has the milk in it is treif. But if I have 120 times the meat to the milk, I have a rove connected to whatever part of the meat is treif. It's like a mixture of two pieces of meat. One that's kosher, where the milk didn't get to, because the whole concern is that the milk didn't get everywhere. If the milk got everywhere, then it's batel b'shishim. So if it's not batel, if you're going to say it didn't get everywhere, so good. So now I have some meat that has milk in it, right next to and indiscernible from meat that doesn't have milk in it. So as long as I have a rove of meat that doesn't have milk in it, can I get the meat that does have milk in it, then it's going to be okay. Chiddush. That's what the Yad Yehuda suggests. So again, practical application. Your freezer breaks and you find that the milk or the ice cream melted and is now soaking a piece of meat, a pre-cooked piece of meat. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, rinse it off. Right? You just rinse it off. According to the Ramah, it's asr. If the meat was spiced or it has any crevices, it's asr unless there's a hefsin meruba. The Shach at the end of Sivkat and Chaf Aleph argues on the Ramah and says that even if there is a hefsin meruba, you should not rely on the Shulchan Aruch. You should still be actually machmir. So the Shach is even more machmir than the Ramah. However, if the piece of meat in your freezer was raw, then you can just rinse it off, even according to the Shach, and even without Hefsid Meruba, if it was raw. All of this was only if the meat was previously cooked. The Shach quotes Shitas that Asr, even cold raw meat that falls into cold milk, if the meat was spiced or has crevices. But nevertheless, we'll leave that out. Good. Now, Svardim, Kav Chaim points out, Svardim passing like the Shulchan Aruch. So Svardim could be Mekel, even though Kav Chaim says, Bal Nefesh should be Machmir for the Ramah. What if the milk isn't even slightly salted, which I assume our milk is not salted in any way? Right? They make, if you skim plus, you count whatever they do to it to make it never spoil. I don't know if that counts as salted. No, I'm not sure. But the Aruch HaShulchan says that it seems from the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah that we're only talking about meat falling into some slightly salted milk. But if meat falls into just plain milk, then even if the meat is cooked, spiced, hot, it doesn't matter. All you need is kedei klipa. But the Aruch HaShulchan quotes from the Shach and Sifkat and Beis that the Shulchan Aruch is also referring to a case where the meat falls into plain milk. So the machlokas haposkim, whether it's you need the milk to be slightly salted for all of this to be true. Again, none of this ever really happens, so this is not like the most halacha l'maisa, part of our limud. But let's just quickly chazer what happened, what the Shulchan Aruch and Ramah each say. Hot roast falls into cold milk. Hot roast, meaning cooked meat, falls into cold milk. Shulchan Aruch say, kedei klipa. Right? Unless the meat is spiced or has crevices, then just the meat would be asir. So just kedei klipa. The Ramah would say, also kedei klipa, unless the meat is spiced or has crevices, and then again, just the meat would be asir. Cold roast falls into cold milk. Cold roast falls into cold, so it's previously cooked, but it's cold and falls into cold milk. Shulchan Aruch, mutter. The Ramah, you got to scrub each one. Unless the meat was spiced or has crevices, then the whole meat is going to be asr. But perhaps in Ruby you could be mekel that it's not going to be asr. Raw meat falls into cold milk, so Shulchan Aruch, mutter. The Ramah also would say in that case, mutter. So that is the basic summary. Again, we're not spending a lot of time on the end of Siman Sadi Aleph because Maliach is not exactly the most common situation, so I didn't think it was kedai to spend an inordinate amount of time on it. So let's begin at least by way of introduction, Siman Sadi Beis, some of the principles, and these principles are going to be critical to be aware of as we continue in Yaradeya. There is a pasuk in the Torah, okay? So something much more familiar to us. Shemos Perachav Gimel Pasuk Beis. The pasuk says, Achrei Rabim Lahatos. From the pasuk of Achrei Rabim Lahatos, what do we learn? What halacha do we learn from Achrei Rabim Lahatos? We learn Azliman Basaruba, and we learn Bittel Brov, right? Two separate halachas. What's Azliman Basaruba that you follow the Rov? So you have a Sanhedrin, you have 23 judges on the Sanhedrin, the Dandini and the Fashos, and 15 of them say Chayiv and 8 of them say Pater. So what's the Psak? The Psak of that Beis Din? Chayiv. Right? Achram Latos, that's the Pasuk. So Achram Latos, we learn that you follow the majority of Beis Din when it comes to sentencing somebody. Right? That's certainly true. We learn that as Linan Basar Ruba. However, Chazal have an additional limud from Achrei Rabim, from Achrei Rabim Lahatos. Right? Chazal point out that normally midoraisa chad betray batel. There's a din of bittel barov based on the pasuk of Achrei Rabim Lahatos. That pasuk alone is what tells me the basic din that we know of is bittel barov. So. something asr falls into a greater amount of something mutter. Mida oraisa, it's batel baruch. Then there's a machlokas in the Gemara in Masechas Menachos. There's a Gemara in Menachos on Daf Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. Gemara says like this: Tanan Hasam. This is right at the beginning of the Gemara, right after the Mishnah. Menachos Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. Tanan Hasam. Dam shenis arev b'mayim. You have blood that gets mixed with water. Im yesh bo maris dam kosher. If it looks like blood, it's enough blood that it colored the water. If you take a giant vat of water and you drop like a drop of blood into it, so you won't see any difference. It will look like regular water. But if there's enough blood that it looks like blood, kosher. Nisarev biyayin, roen also ki'ilu humayin. But if blood gets mixed in with wine, we have to view the blood as if it were, we have to view the wine as if it were water. Nisarev bidam behema o bidam chaya, roen also ki'ilu humayin. And if it gets mixed with dam behema or dam chaya, also we view it as if it's mayim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ein dam vatal dam. That's kilat. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ein dam vatal dam. That you'll never have bittel of dam being mevatel other dam. That if you have two types of dam, one dam cannot be mevatel the other type of dam. Let's say you have dam karbanos, right? So one carbon's dam is only supposed to be nizrak in two quarters of the mizbeach, and the other one is supposed to be in four quarters of the mizbeach. So do you assume that one is mevatel the other? Says Rabbi Yehuda, ein dam mevatel dam. Am Rabbi Yochanan shnei mikra echadarshu. V'lokach midam hapar umidam asair. You take from the blood of the par mixed with the blood of the seer in Yom HaKippurim. What do you mean blood of the par mixed with the blood of the seer? Hadavar yadua shadamu shel par meruba midamu shel seir. Everyone knows that a cow has way more blood than a goat. So Rabbanan Savri mikan la'olin she'in mevatlin ze'ezeh. The Rabbanan say, you're right. We see there that the blood of the goat is still called blood of a goat, even though it's overwhelmed by way more blood of a cow. That's a din in karbanos. That by karbanos, one carbon's blood is not going to be mevatel the other carbon's blood. That's a special din you have by karbanos. Rabbi says, no, that's not a din in karbanos. That's a din in two like kinds, in any halacha. Whenever you have two things that are the same, one is not going to be mevatel the other. So again, machlokas Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan, which is explained by Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara over there in Masechas Menachos. According to Rabbi Yehuda, we see from the Karbanos of Yom HaKippurim, min b'mino eino batel. You have two liquids, one of them is asr, one of them is mutter, they mix together, it's never batel, the whole thing's always going to be asr. So a drop of non-kosher wine falls into a huge vat of kosher wine that has 1,000 times the non-kosher wine. Halacha is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, all treif. The whole thing is treif. You have this giant vat of kosher wine. One drop of non-kosher wine falls in, Rabbi Yehuda, all treif. Where's bittul b'shishim? Bittul b'shishim only works when it's two different things. A little milk into a chicken soup. But over here, it's all the same. Min b'mino eino batel. That is Rabbi Yehuda's shita. And it's based on the pasuk v'lokach midam hapar umidam hasayir, that the Torah still calls it the blood of the goat, even though there's a lot more blood of the ox than there is blood of the goat. So you see that two of the same liquids, namely in the case of the Gemara, in the case of the Torah, blood that are mixed together are never batel. They each the isser one still retains its identity. Bittel means that something loses its identity and we pretend it's not there. You cannot do that with min b'mino according to Rabbi Yehuda. The dam asayir is always there. One second, let me just finish a thought. So two of the same liquids are mixed together, never batel. The Rabbanan, however, see the same pasuk, but they say, so I see over there, there's a din in karbanos, that with karbanos, one liquid is not mevatel the other. But by any other mixture, iser the heter, the iser can become batel, even if it's the same type as the heter, even if it is min b'mino. That's yavish b'yavish. Over here we're talking about two moist things that are totally mixed together. Right? Yavish b'yavish is a din in rov. We'll get to that. Why is this? How do you explain why min b'mino would not become batel? Meaning, there's just one teeny tiny drop in non-kosher wine. How could that possibly affect the entire vat? It goes against everything we know, right? Isn't the whole concept of bittul is that it's overwhelmed, that there's some quantity that's going to overwhelm? So there is a famous Ran in Maseches Nedarim. There are a lot of famous Rans in Nedarim. The Ran in Nedarim is in Nedarim we don't have Rashi, and we don't have Tosfos really. So we have a fake Rashi and we have the Ran. So the Ran takes on, you know, when you learn Nedarim, you learn Gemara Ran. That's typically the way it's learned. So it's the Ran is like Rashi and Tosfos and much more all wrapped into one. The Ran is the primary Rishon you learn. When you learn Nedarim, it's printed on the side of the page. It's printed together with the Gemara. So the most famous Ran in Nedarim that you hear quoted this time of year is Shlo Berchu B'Torah Tchilo. What do you mean? Because of Birchus HaTorah, we lost Eretz Yisrael. So the Ran quotes a famous idea from Rabbeinu Yonah. No, it's Chashivas HaTorah that we didn't have. That we didn't think the Torah was Chashiv enough in Vatel. Rabbi Razin has a list of like top five Rans in the Dharm that everybody knows. So this is one of them, the one that we're about to learn. The Ran says, you know how Bittul works? Bittul works when there's a competition, there's conflict, and one overwhelms the other. So I have a little bit of milk in chicken soup. There's conflict between the milk and the chicken soup. But there's so much more chicken soup, it totally overwhelms the milk, and the milk loses all of its characteristics. You can't even tell that there's milk in the mixture. That's the concept of bittul. What happens, though, if you have a little bit of chicken soup, and then you add more chicken soup to the pot? Let's say you have a big chalent, and then, you know, you wanted to make a little extra, so you also add a little small chalent. Right? So that small challenge is a little small challenge. When you put that small challenge into the giant pot, does the small challenge lose its characteristics, lose its flavors? No, what happens to that small challenge? It's enhanced because it's joining forces together with something that's just like it. When you have two things that are like kinds that join together with each other, there's no bittul, adrava. Each one is enhanced from the other. The Ran writes, Nun beizom en aleph in the Dharm. The kasavar Rabbi Yehuda dahainu taima mishum demin bemino lo batel. Min bemino is not batel. Why? Lefisha kol davar shuhu dome lechaveiro eino machlisho umevatlo ela ma'amido umechazko. When two things are like kinds, one doesn't overwhelm the other. One doesn't try to defeat the other. They each are mechazik each other. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda holds in all of his Sevata, min b'mino zayin abatel. The Ran uses that to explain the concept of davar sheyesh lo matirin. Oh, we discussed davar sheyesh lo matirin once. What's davar sheyesh lo matirin? Something that will eventually become mutter. So we learned one halacha about davar sheyesh lo matirin. That anything that will eventually become mutter, don't rely on sabik rabban l'kul, right? There's another halacha about davar sheyesh lo matirin. A davar sheyesh lo matirin can never become batel. You have something that's usher right now, but will become mutter, and it gets mixed in with a whole bunch of heter, it will never become batel. You just got to wait it out till it becomes mutter. It does not become batel, no matter how much. 1,000 times the heter to this one davar usher, which is yesh lo matirin, it doesn't become batel. Why not? Says the Ran, don't you see? It's exactly what Rabbi Yehuda's idea is. Rabbi Yehuda's idea is that when you have two like kinds, there's no competition. If there's no competition, there's no bittel. That's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying as far as the physical world is concerned. What about the metaphysical world? What about something that has characteristics of Issur conflicting with something that has characteristics of Heter? You have the same thing. When Issur and Heter collide, one will overwhelm the other if you have Shishim, right? Or Rov or whatever, depending on what you need. One will overwhelm the other. But what if even the Issur is kind of Mutter? What if even the davar aser is yesh lo matirin? You just wait a while, it will become mutter. So inherently, it's not really, really, really a chatzah shalisir. Then there's not really a collision. There's not really a competition. Then it's kind of a spiritual min b'mino. It's kind of a metaphysical min b'mino. That's how the Ran understands. That's what the Ran, so the first part of the Ran, you know, is not the Gishmaka part, but that's the part that matters to us. I mean, the first part of the Ran that just explains why isn't there any of the whole min b'mino ein batel? So he just says because that's the way Bittul works, that there has to be a collision. But the geshmak part is how he uses that to explain davar sheyesh lamatira not being batel, because he views it as not being a competition, because even the davar aser has characteristics of heter.
I think the Ron has to choose one though. Maybe he's saying that it's like mutter, so we're going to make it mutter. But then he's saying, oh, since so like now this is like mutter, so now it's the iser part falls on it. But meaning he's not choosing one. He's saying that it's a davar that's iser, but it's like mutter.
No. Meaning that when two things have inherent qualities, metaphysical qualities that conflict with each other, one will overwhelm the other. But if one of them is sort of like the other one, because its inherent qualities really would make it mutter, you just have to wait a little bit. So then you can't say that it's batel.
Right. So then
and therefore you have to wait.
But if it's like mutter.
What do you mean like mutter? It's a davar sheyesh lamatir. Yes, it has mutter characteristics, but it's not mutter right now. Right now it's us. It's davar sheyesh lamatir. So it could be mutter after some time.
You have tricky soup, small drop that falls into a full cup. Isn't there also metaphysical clash?
Yeah, there is a meaning with iser and heter. Yeah. Right. There's a metaphysical clash, but there's no physical clash. So according to the Rabbanan, who argue on Rabbi Yehuda and Achnami, it's bata. Right, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that min b'mino zeno batel, meaning when the Ran is saying this about davar sheyesh lamatir, and he's saying that everyone agrees with the principle, you know, with the idea that bittel involves a conflict or a competition of some sort. It's just a question of how to apply it. Do you view it from the physical level also, or do you view it only on the metaphysical level? That's essentially what he's saying. Yeah.
When we apply bittel, whatever liquid is getting in, let's say, does that add on to the shiur that we have? Like, we have two things that are, because they're both also, then according to this, it wouldn't matter anyway. But let's say we have two things, I don't know, and then if it would get bottled into something else, but then that would be maybe shishim to another thing.
Well, we'll get to those complicated cases next week. Let's get the yisodos. So yisod number one, we have a din of akher am lahatos, right? Which really, really just tells us that azlin basaruba. But Chazal derived from there that there's such a thing called bittel berov also. Then we had a machlokas in Maseches Menachos between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. Do we say min bimino eino batel? Two like kinds cannot become batel. That's shitas who? Rabbi Yehuda. Or do we assume min bimino batel? These are the building blocks, right? The whole next week will be a bracha levatala if you don't get like the building blocks, right? So building blocks. Din of bittel berov. There's din of min bimino according to Rabbi Yehuda. Min bimino eino batel. According to the Rabbanan, min bimino is batel. What's the svara of min bimino eino batel? The Ran gave a svara. The Ran gave a svara that because they're like kinds, there's no competition between them, and one cannot overwhelm the other. The Gemara Chulin Sadi Zayin Amar Aleph. Gemara Chulin Sadi Zayin Amar Aleph tells us that there are three different types of mixtures, and each have a different psak halacha regarding how to decide on the status of those mixtures. The Gemara Tzadi Zayin Amar Aleph. The Amar Rava. Amar Rabbanan B'tayma, V'Amar Rabbanan B'kfeila, V'Amar Rabbanan B'shishim. Sometimes if you want to know whether a mixture of Isser and Heter is kosher, the way to check is whether there's a taste of the Isser in the mixture. Do you taste the chicken soup? Do you taste that little bit of chazer? Sometimes it's B'kfeila. You can't... it's not about measuring taste, it's about having an expert taster taste it for you, and sometimes just by measuring shishim. And we'll get into what this means. Hilkach, min b'she'eno mino, de hetera b'tayma, de isura b'kfeila, o min b'mino de leka lemeka matayma, inami min b'she'eno mino, de isura de leka b'kfeila b'shishim. Now, what in the world does all that mean? So says the Gemara. Three types of mixtures. Each one has a psak halacha, how to decide the status of the mixture. Type A. Two different types of foods mixed together. Both foods are kosher, but not for everybody. How could you have a food that's not kosher for everybody?
Nazir, truma.
A nazir, truma, right? Truma is only eaten by a kohen. A nazir is not allowed to drink wine, right? So you have food that's not kosher for everybody. Let's take the truma, for example. So truma, only mutter for a kohen, gets mixed in with regular kosher food. So the kohen can taste the food And he could tell the Yisrael if he could taste the truma in it or not. That's betayim. I'm a Yisrael. I want to know, can I eat this food? I saw a little bit of truma get mixed in there. So can I eat it? Kohen could taste it and he could say, you can't even taste the truma in here. And if he tells me you can't even taste the truma in here, it's batel, it's not even noticeable. And if there's no truma flavor noticeable, the food is mutter. Fine. Or like a little bit of truma got cooked with chul. And then you took the truma out, and the Kohen's going to eat the truma. But the flavor of the truma might be in the chulin. I don't know if it gave flavor. The Kohen could taste it, and he could tell me. That's case number one. Case number two, or B. I remember we were doing A, B, C, or 1, 2, and 3, but whatever. Case number two, or B. Two different types of food. One is kosher, the other is not kosher. You could just ask a non-Jew to taste it for you and tell you if the non-kosher flavor is noticeable. Yesterday, you know, you saw that the challah got cooked with just a little bit of nevela, a little bit of chazer. So the guy could taste it and he could say, yeah, you can't even taste the chazer in here. It tastes like a regular Jewish challah. And that's good enough. Case number three, let's say there is no non-Jew to ask. Or it wasn't chazer that got mixed into challah. It was nevela chicken soup that got mixed into regular chicken soup. So there's no tasting because they all taste the same anyway. Right? So it's min bimino. So tasting is not going to help. Not a Jew tasting, not a guy tasting. So you need shishim. You need to just measure quantity. You need shishim of the permissible food in relation to the non-kosher food. So the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Sadi Beis, Sif Aleph, Paskins like the Rambam, that you're allowed to rely on the tasting of a non-Jew when non-kosher food mixed with a different type of kosher food. If you have a tarovis, a non-kosher that was cooked together with kosher, and inside Siman Sadi Beis Sif Aleph, here we go. Kazayis basar shenafel l'toch yora shel chalav roteach. You have a little bit of basar falls into a giant pot of boiling milk. Toim ha'ovid kochavim akadeira. The guy could taste the pot, not the pot, the food in the pot. Im amar sheish batam basar asura. If he says, "Ah, this is the most delicious milk because you could taste the meat in it," then it's asur. Im lav mitaras. But if he says, "Ah, it's just milk, warm milk, so it's mutter." Afilu b'pachas mishishim. You measure it, it's not shishim, it doesn't matter. You don't need shishim. You just need to make sure that there's no time. Good. That is the mechaber, right? The mechaber paskins that you're allowed to rely on a kfeila, you're allowed to rely on a non-Jewish taster. Then the Shulchan Aruch says, even if it's not shishim, right, you're allowed to rely on the taster. Comes along the shach in Sivkatan Bey, not here, in Siman Sadiches Sivkatan Beis, and he explains that to just trust any guy to tell you, the housekeeper's been living there long enough, right? She knows what you need to hear. She knows that if she says that she can taste meat, you can throw the whole thing away. So she doesn't want you to have to do that. So she's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. It tastes just like regular milk. Can you trust that? How do you know you could trust a guy? So the Shach points out that to trust a guy who's just a regular guy, you need them to be what's called Masiach Lefi Tuma. Are you familiar with the phrase, Masiach Lefi Tuma?
It's like random, you're not explaining it, but you're not daft.
They're not telling you in a sense where they understand that they're being relied on for halacha.
Yeah.
They're just saying in a conversation. You say, ooh, I have the most delicious milk stew or milk dish. You want to try my milk? And they taste it, they say, it is pretty good, but you know, my mom used to make a better one because she put meat in hers, and this one obviously doesn't have meat in it. Got it. Okay. Right? Meaning it would have to be something like that. Masiach Lefi Tuma. They just happen to be saying it. He doesn't know that you're relying on him for halach. He just happens to have mentioned to you that he doesn't taste any meat in the milk. But that's by a regular guy, says the Shach. But if you have a kfeila, what's called a kfeila, which is a professional chef, then we believe him, even if he knows that you're relying on him, because his reputation is on the line, right? He doesn't want, he's afraid to lie, because if it turns out that people are able to taste meat in that milk, and he wasn't able to taste it, so then that will look very bad for him. You know, like they say, there are wine connoisseurs that could taste different elements of the wine with different parts of their tongue. You know, like people who are like very, very sensitive to taste. I think it's all above the mice. I think if you give them a $9 bottle of wine and you put it in a fancy bottle, they'd say, ooh, yeah, fantastic. There's someone in my shul told me that he keeps an old bottle of scotch. You know, that's it's like some 30-year-old, like $1,000 bottle of scotch, and just keeps refilling it with Johnny Walker 12. You know, just and people go, "Ooh, this is amazing!" You're like, yeah, whatever. So the guy said, actually, well, I mean, this is terrible. You shouldn't do this. But he said they had a bunch of chavra over for a chabura. They were learning together, and they had the chaims and Shabbos morning chabura. And after everyone left, he took all the little backwash shot glasses and he poured it into the back into the thing. I mean, oh, it was amazing. Okay, you shouldn't do that. That's not nice. No. It's pre-corona. So a chef is believed because if even if he knows you're relying on him because his reputation is online. The Ramah disagrees with Mechaber. The Ramah says you can't rely on a non-Jew. You always need Shishim, right? The Ramah over here, Sif Aleph. Vayin mekamansim tzadiches de'ein onu noag nusmochatim asov kavim binin Shishim b'chalini. You can't rely on a non-Jew. We're always going to need Shishim. That's the way we're going to have to measure it. So the Kav Chaim just has a very positive point. Or Ravadia, actually. Ravadia makes a point. I'm sorry, we'll get to that in a second. Ravadia makes the following point. He said, the Kav Chaim writes that Sfardim also passed like the Ramah over here. That they also require Shishim, they don't really rely on a Kfeila. But Ravadia says, Behefse Meruba, the Sfardim could pass like the Shulchan Aruch. Or if there's another Sniff Lahakel. Now, what if a Jew didn't realize that there was a problem here? A Jew comes, and he didn't realize that there was some tarovis over here, that there was some non-kosher food that was cooked together with kosher food, and then he pulled it out. He doesn't know. And he's like, oh, cholent, I love cholent. And he eats a bowl of cholent. And then you come and you say, oh my God, I forgot to tell you, there was nevela in that cholent yesterday while it was cooking, and I took the nevela out. And the Jew says, oh, you Mamish couldn't taste it. It tasted just like regular cholent. You're not allowed to rely on a guy. Can you rely on a Jew? He shouldn't have done it. But he did. So can you rely on a Jew? So the Shach and Sim Sadiches Sivkat and Hay says you're allowed to rely on the tasting of a Jew. So if, let's say you take a neder not to eat meat. We don't have to make it so dramatic that it was nevela. You took a neder that you're not going to eat meat. And some meat sauce spilled on a piece of broccoli or something. So ask another Jew, taste the broccoli, tell me if you could taste any meat, and if he says no, then you could eat the broccoli. Or you fried, you cooked some chicken in a milchik pan or something. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, and Rav Avadya would say, even you can do this b'efsim meruba, according to the Mechaber, you could have a non-Jew taste the food and say, can't taste any milk, it's not noticeable. By the way, 100% of the time, you will not be able to taste the milk, probably. Right? If there was a frying pan that was used for egg and cheese that morning for breakfast, then was cleaned out, and now in the afternoon, you fried some schnitzel in it or something. You're not going to be able to taste it. So, according to the Mechaber, you could ask a non-Jew, and if the non-Jew is unable to taste it, then that's fine. And again, Rav Avadya is willing to be mekel if it's a hefsid merubah. What about Ashkenazim? What do we know? Ashkenazim? We need Shishim. We don't rely on tasting. But, and this Achronim point out, what do Ashkenazim rely on? Another Jew. You don't need a guy. If you're an Ashkenazi, you need a Sephardi. Right? Why? Have the Sephardi get a guy to taste it. If the Sephardi gets a guy to taste it, and the guy says, I don't taste anything in here, the Sephardi's now allowed to eat it. And then the Sephardi can say, confirmed! I don't taste anything in here. And then the Ashkenazi can go ahead and eat it. So while the Sephardi can rely on the guy and the Ashkenazi can't, the Ashkenazi is allowed to rely on another Jew. The Sephardi is just as much of a Jew as an Ashkenazi, as maybe more. So the Ashkenazi could rely on the Sephardi. Then you better not eat it. It turns out that the Sephardi has to find a more reliable non-Jew.
No, I'm saying
Oh, he said he doesn't taste it. That's what we're saying. That's what I'm saying. That once the Sephardi is allowed to rely on the non-Jew, the Sephardi then tastes it. The Ashkenazi can rely on the Sephardi. So all the Ashkenazi needs is a Sephardi to tell them that it doesn't taste good. I mean, that you can't taste the trait.
What if you have a non-from Jew? Like, you don't ask him. A non-from Jew has...
Lechara would have the same din as a guy.
And also, what if it is but the Lashishim? Like, mathematically but the Lashishim, then you taste it, and for whatever reason, you actually could taste it.
Yeah, so probably you should stop. Shishim is a way to measure time, really. So we assume in this shishim that there's no time. It could happen. And we have cases like that. We have tavlin, things that are very, very strong. So we assume kumlus david l'taima. Anything that's there to add flavor, we assume it's not batel b'shishim, because if it's adding flavor, then it's not batel b'shishim. So it certainly happens. One last thing, just a point over here, and we'll get to Chaticha Nasas Nevela on Sunday. That's going to be what we start with, but which you've probably heard Chanan Chaticha Nasas Nevela. No, you ever heard that phrase? All right, anyway, you'll hear it Sunday. One last point over here: meat falls into a pot of milk. The milk is 60 times the meat, right? So what's going to be? Pull the meat out. Now the milk is kosher, even though it was cooked together, right? Will the meat be kosher? Well, ounce of meat falls into 65 ounces of milk. They cook together. You're like, oh, wait, there's a piece of meat in there. You yank it out, pull it out. The milk, kosher, right? Because it's batel b'shishim. What about that little piece of meat you just pulled out? What? It's absolutely treif, right? That's basar b'chalav. There is no bittel happening in that meat. It's a kazayis of meat saturated with a kazayis of milk, right? Meaning the milk is going to be kosher because the tam of the meat that went into the milk became batel b'shishim. But the tam of the milk that went into the meat in this piece of meat is still there and it's not batel b'shishim. Right? The milk that entered the meat, this is going to get complicated. We're going to have to get into tichanas nevela. Meaning, where this goes, just to get a sense, the milk goes into that piece of meat, right? So the meat with the milk inside of it is what? It's basar b'chalav. Let's say that milk then goes out of that piece of meat into something else, into more milk. So that milk is now treifa milk, because it's basar b'chalav milk. That's the unique thing about basar b'chalav, is that even though it's kosher, when it comes together, it becomes not kosher. So then it's chaticha nasas nevela. The milk that was kosher becomes nevela now. It becomes basar b'chalav. And therefore, it might have the capacity to asar other milk. Maybe we'll get to that on Sunday. Maybe now's not a good time to get to that. So again, the basic thing we learned today, we just laid some groundwork. There's a din called bitul berov. There's a machlokas whether min bimino is batel or min bimino is never batel. We discussed the idea of something being batel because you cannot detect the tam. There are three levels of that, according to the Gemara. Sometimes you rely on a kfela, on a non-Jew. Sometimes you rely on a Jew, if it's something that the Jew is allowed to eat, like the Kohen is allowed to eat truma, to taste it. And when you have, when it's something a Jew is not allowed to taste for you, and there's no non-Jew available, you rely on shishim. We pointed out that the whole idea of relying on a kfela is very limited. It's got to be someone, according to the Shach, it's got to be someone who's Masiach Lefituma, who doesn't know that you're relying on him. And even then, only Sfardim rely on a non-Jew. Ashkenazim typically are not nohig to rely on a non-Jew, but we pointed out you have that workaround, namely that Ashkenazim are allowed to rely on Sfardim, and Sfardim in turn are allowed to rely on a non-Jew. So if the Sfardi asks the non-Jew, and the non-Jew doesn't taste anything, then the Sfardi could try it himself, and he cannot taste anything, and then the Ashkenazi would be allowed to eat it. Yeah, so Rav Avadya says, and we should try to be machmir like that, so I should try to be machmir like that, but behefsim merubo, if there's any other sad v'hakel, then you can go with the ikudin of the machad.
Even in a standard case, though, a Sephardi can't actually...
Right, so a standard case, the Sephardi can't actually do it. Right, it won't work.
But can you pour more milk? Let's say it's only 40 to 1 ratio. Is that a 4 more milk?
So that's called Ein Vat L'Nesil L'Chati. So hopefully we'll get to that next time.